we're back! Back again. Valley's back. Tell a friend. Oh, wait. Well, come on. You're wrestling fans. You probably don't have any friends. Your mom doesn't count. Hey, I'm back. We're a couple of weeks away. Nice to be back, or at least too early to feel the pain. So here we are. Back again, back in the treehouse, here near the shores of Lake Washington, as close as I can afford to live to Lake Washington anyway, right in my price range. It's Jim Valley on Saturday Morning Wrestling, live each and every Saturday here, 8:30 on my coast, 11:30 on your coast, and somewhere in the middle as well, all around the world, on blogtalkradio.com. I want to thank Pat McNeil. He's did the past couple of Saturdays for me. Filling in with Jake Roberts and the Grappler and a couple other people I know. So thank you to Pat. Talking with Pat, who lives on the other coast, he was saying that, oh gosh, it's so nice. I forgot how early this is. Pat McNeil lives in Virginia. It's Virginia, Pat. Your show starts at 11:30 your time. Baby. Big baby. Got to be a big baby about getting up. Anyway, no, I'm just kidding. No, thank you to Pat. Thank you to everybody for listening. But we are back today live. Back again in the clubhouse hanging out with you. Got my Asuka shirt. I went to NXT on Thursday. It was here in Seattle at the Paramount Theater, which is an odd venue. For wrestling, anyway. I don't know if, you know, depending on where you live, there probably is a Paramount Theater or a Fox Theater or something like that where it's a large concert venue. It's a concert hall. And they have Broadway plays there. They have the Broadway series and all kinds of things. So it's a gorgeous venue. I think I tweeted out some pictures just to get an idea of how pretty the venue is at the Paramount Theater, but, it's a stage. And I was pretty sure, as far as all the years that I've been going to the Paramount Theater, that I didn't recall a time where you could remove, say, the front rows or anything like that. I don't recall them ever doing that. So I was pretty sure all the seats were bolted to the floor, and sure enough, when you walk in there, and I think there's pictures on my Twitter at Jim Valley if you want to see it, that the stage was, the ring was fully on the stage. So it was fully on the stage right there. It didn't cover anything, and that was kind of an interesting way to watch wrestling. It didn't, I mean, right now NXT is so popular and so hot and everything that it didn't really make a big difference, but I could see, you know, a lesser promotion where things are a little colder, where that would have more of an effect on people. But it didn't this time. And boy, what a great, great show. Man, what a great show. I loved it. You know, it's funny. During the Attitude Era, people had to use, you know, The Rock and Mick Foley with 15 chairs, chair shots to the head, unprotected chair shots to the head. And things of that nature. But this show, it was crazy. Like, for example, there was a tag team match, The Revival against American Alpha. And they did the spot where you have the abdominal stretch on someone. And then, of course, the other tag team member of The Revival grabs the arm and does the, you know, the leverage spot. Because, of course, when you pull on someone's arm in wrestling, wrestling physics dictate that, therefore, the spot is 10 times more painful. Duh. But anyway, and sure enough, the crowd was booing it. It was great. And the crowd was cheering where it was supposed to cheer, and for the most part, booing where it was supposed to boo, and it was a really fun night of wrestling. Nobody did anything too crazy. Everybody worked, you know, pretty hard and didn't try to kill themselves, which was nice. And I just had just a great, great time. What a fun night. And then during the end of the show, we got to get up on stage. And right around that time, Asuka came out and she threw her shirt. And I'm pretty sure, I don't know who, but I'm pretty sure we were in the comp section at that point. Because I think there were some relatives of wrestlers around us. Because Asuka threw the shirt and nobody tried to catch it. And it just kind of landed in my wife's lap. So I tweeted out a picture. I've got the Asuka shirt. So if anyone needs like an extra small women's shirt, doesn't fit an American. Way too small to fit an American. Maybe an American Girl doll. Maybe. Even then, it might be a little tight. But yeah, I've got the Asuka shirt for Strong Style Barbie, who's coming to Toys R Us near you. So you can have that. But it's pretty hilarious. We caught the Asuka shirt because I've never caught a baseball or caught anything, and you know, a drum stick or anything at a concert, nothing. And now we have an Asuka shirt up here in the clubhouse. How fun! Coming up today on the show, we're going to talk some Memphis wrestling today. And not only Memphis wrestling, but I don't know if you know this, Jerry Lawler has opened up a bar and grill on Beale Street in Memphis. So joining us today is the manager and not only the shoot manager of Jerry Lawler's Bar and Grill, but also a former Memphis wrestling manager and promoter. And all-around Memphis guy Randy Hales is going to be on the show coming up in a little bit so we can talk some Memphis wrestling and talk to Randy Hales. You may remember him from the dying days of the Memphis promotion, the USWA, and also Power Pro Wrestling. And he's been around quite a while. I think he called the – I want to say that he called the spot where Randy Savage pile drove Ricky Morton into the table at the Mid-South Coliseum. I'm pretty sure he did that, so – so we'll talk to Randy Hales coming up in a little bit. If you want to get in for some phone calls before we get to Randy, you can call up at 646-721-9828. 646-721-9828. It's Jim Valley. We are back here on Saturday Morning Wrestling and very happy to be back. By the way, we're working on some exciting things as far as people go. I'm still working on it. It was just one of those weeks, man. Sometimes you lose momentum. I can't explain exactly how it works, but sometimes you lose momentum when you're not constantly trying to get guests all the time. You get on a roll, and there just seems to be this unexplicable energy that you get, and you get people on, and it goes really well, and then you stop, and then it just seems to affect everything, and it's hard to get the momentum back. So we're working on that. Got a bunch of things out, a bunch of feelers out to talk to people, and hopefully we'll get some really cool guests coming up in the very near future. So check that out. But either way, we're glad you're listening. We're glad you're back. And thank you to Pat McNeil for filling in the past couple of weeks while I was in Fiji. Because who wouldn't rather be in Fiji than here? It would have been like 4 in the morning or 2 in the morning, some ridiculous 3 in the morning. I think it's 3. It would have been like 3:30 in the morning tomorrow in Fiji. So I wouldn't have been able to do the show. And I'm not even sure that I would have had strong enough internet connection to do it. That was really the main thing. But speaking of Fiji, Jimmy Snuka in the news, dealing with that murder trial, alleged murder from years ago that he may or may not be competent to stand trial. But talking with people in Fiji, I couldn't find too many people that remember Jimmy Snuka. But he... you know, I found some older people, maybe like one older guy, but that was about it. So, you know, it's just kind of one of those things. I guess life moves on and people forget, or another generation, I suppose. Or maybe I was just asking the wrong people. It's hard to say. But we can talk a whole bunch of things you want to talk about this morning while we open up the phone calls, open up the lines, and got Randy Hales coming up in a few minutes. But again, 646-721-9828. You can email pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. We're on the Twitter. I'm at Jim Valley, so be sure to follow me for at Jim Valley. But yeah, let's take a couple of phone calls. Let's go to 862. 862, you're on the live cast. Who's this and where are you calling from?
It's Kylan, Jim. How are you?
I'm good, man. What's going on, Styling and Profiling, Kylan?
Nah, not much, Jim. working on a couple of projects for you here for future guests, and hopefully we can get those set up for you sooner rather than later.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
I'm excited for you because these are people that I've gotten to share stories with and learn from and have really enjoyed the experience so far. So I'm sure you will too, and hopefully our audience will as well.
Absolutely. So what's on your mind today, man?
Oh, let's see here. I'm going to pitch you similar questions to what I pitched Bruce and Travis on yesterday's show. So I'm not sure if you've heard about some of the potential new network shows, but one of them that struck me as interesting is WWE is going to be doing this E-True Hollywood Story kind of a show called Behind the Curtain. And as I said yesterday, two of the potential ideas are one on Gorgeous George and one on Bruiser Brody's murder. Who are some other subjects that you would like to see as my first question?
Gosh, I mean, there's you could do so many. I guess the, you know who I'd like to see is, I think I'd like to see somebody like Mildred Burke. I think that would be an interesting story. And also because I think that people have been trained over the years to think that women's wrestling began and ended with the Fabulous Moolah. So I think that Mildred Burke might be a great choice in my humble opinion. She would be great. Maybe Jim Londos, because I think people think, you know, he is arguably the biggest wrestling draw ever. And I don't think a lot of people know that, so that might be something. Hard to say. Those are two that come to mind. I mean, a lot of the stuff have been done. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts?
One that I would like to see is maybe the story of like a Gino Hernandez, or going back even further than that, maybe a King Bobby Shane.
Bobby Shane might be interesting. Yeah, that's a pretty good one. Yeah, Gino Hernandez, that would be one of those good Hollywood story types. But yeah, that would be a good one. You know, the Von Erickson stuff, that's pretty much been done. Maybe you could do one on the Bobby Shane plane crash or the Ric Flair plane crash, just specifically. The crashes themselves, that might be entertaining.
I think I heard the Flair plane crash is also being discussed for this, but
by the way, speaking of that, have you seen Camp WWE?
No, and quite frankly, I have no interest to, but if you say I should give it a shot, then perhaps I will.
Well, it's I don't know. I find some of it to be a little too gratuitous. I think they drop, like, sometimes there's a little too much swearing in it just for the sake of swearing. And I'm not against that per se. Just in the matter of, I don't know. It just seems sometimes it doesn't seem to have a point. But to me, the funniest part is that the Ric Flair character seems to very much be based on stories of Ric Flair in off-camera situations. He runs around. It's obvious that he doesn't have anything underneath his robe, and he's always trying to score with things. And in this case, he's like trying to score with a bear in the forest and other stuff like that. And I was like, wow. So to me, that part is pretty hilarious. But the rest of it, I mean, the Vince McMahon character is pretty funny, but the rest of it I find to be just kind of meh. So I kind of give it maybe a slight thumbs up, thumbs in the middle kind of thing.
Do we have time for a second question or?
Sure. Yeah, we got time for. Go ahead, hit me with one more.
So I'm sure you know this and perhaps maybe a little bit more than me, but have you ever noticed that after a lot of matches, a heel will continue to beat on their opponent unmercifully, and the referee doesn't bother to reverse the decision?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I mean, over time, you sort of accept certain wrestling rules, sort of like wrestling physics, you know?
My question there is, what vintage wrestling rule do you think should be re-energized for this generation of more knowledgeable fans?
That's a good question. I'm trying to think. A lot of them have come back now. It's interesting, as Pat and I, each week for VIP members, we do the Way Back Playback. And what happens is we watch shows in real time, and you can watch along with us, usually on the WWE Network. And a lot of the stuff we're doing, obviously, is from the Attitude Era and such. And it's interesting to see how the rules relaxed so much back then. And the number one thing, you see the walk-in brawls and no count-outs and stuff. And a lot of those things have been reinstated, and it's taken a while. I think I kind of touched on this during the show, is that, you know, during the tag team match with the Revival and American Alpha, that they did the spot where one guy's got the abdominal stretch, and then he reaches back and grabs his partner's arm, and of course, with wrestling physics, that's leverage, of course, which of course then causes you to hurt someone. It's taken 16, 17 years, but we're finally at the point where that stuff seemingly matters again. And yeah, gosh, it seems like a lot of this stuff is has kind of come around on its own. I can't think of anything off the top of my head because, you know, they're doing countouts, they're counting double teams and things. So I can't think of anything. Do you have any thoughts on that? Do you have an answer to your own question? Because I don't.
Well, mainly the reverse decision thing really bugged me, especially with certain people.
Okay. Hey, man, Kyle, I appreciate the call as always. We will talk to you next time, but it's always good to talk to Stylin' and Profilin' Kylan there in New Jersey. Let's go to 336. 336, you are on Saturday Morning Wrestling. It's Jim Valley. Who's this and where are you calling from?
Hey, Jim Valley, it's Britt Whitmire calling from Flair Country.
Woo! How are things with Katie Vick? Katie Vick is alive.
She's never been deader, Jim.
Is that good? You may know Britt Whitmire from the very popular Brad and Britt podcast, also Bruce Mitchell's favorite podcast, Katie Vick is alive, alive, and you can download those at their various websites. I would imagine also iTunes and all the places where one finds podcasts.
iTunes, Stitcher, your mom's dresser, all that stuff. It's everywhere. So, yeah. I heard you talking about Camp WWE, and I thought the second episode was way better than the first one.
It seems to be a little bit more developed, yeah. I guess I'm a big fan of Robot Chicken, and maybe my expectation was it was going to be more like pop culture and parody and things as opposed to what it is. And maybe it's just maybe it's just going to take me some time to adjust based on expectation.
Yeah, I don't understand exactly why Ric Flair has to get with a bear. I don't know why we can't give him like a lunch lady or something like that to date, quote unquote.
I think Flair is going to get with a lot of different things and objects and people. That's what I think. I think it's going to be. I'm just waiting for Ric Flair to be in the background of something, and you see him and you don't know what he says. But he talks somebody out of their clothes and they start dancing on a table, just like in real life.
When you were just talking to your previous caller, I think it was Kyle, you reminded me of something. You know what I really miss, what angle I really miss, is the reluctant tag team with the two guys who hate each other and don't want to, like, work as a tag team. And I think it's been done a million times, but I think Paul E. did it in ECW with, like Candido and Storm, or maybe Furnace and LaFon. It's the thing where they don't want to work together, but they hold the championship. And Paul E. told them, if I don't get full effort from you guys, if I think you're dogging it at all, I will absolutely like bang you from the territory or whatever. I love that angle.
Yeah, that'd be a good thing. You could do that. That's the thing. It's like sometimes I wonder why, you know, Triple H and Stephanie, every time they make ultimatums, it always seems to be to benefit them or to get them over as opposed to using that leverage to get the talent over. And there's a classic example about how you could use that heel leverage and their heel power to get the talent over. But I digress. We've been talking about that for decades.
No, but I think it'd be great. I think Shane would be the guy to step in and go, hey, this is a new era. We're not going to stand for these shenanigans. You know, I don't know who you would do it with. I don't know if we necessarily want to break up the New Day, or maybe if you're debuting Primo and Epico, it'd be hilarious to have them right from the get-go hate each other and not want to work with each other, but then they have the titles, and then you make them do it. You make them work with each other.
Primo and Epico have the titles. That's so cute. You're so cute. You're adorable.
You think that's not going to happen, Jim? You think that's impossible?
I don't think it's going to happen, no. I think that they're... I don't know.
I wanted to hear you for a moment talk about the Portland territory for just a moment, since that was your bread and butter, your mother's milk. I wanted to know a little bit more about the Portland territory, because I don't know much about it other than the stars that came out of there and the big stars like Piper and Playboy Buddy Rose and Art Barr and so on and so forth. What was some of your favorite stuff back in the day that you loved from the Portland territory?
Well, I think now that I look back, I think the cool thing about the Portland territory is that, you know, and I'm guessing it's, you know, Buddy Rose, you know, if you were to ask him when he was alive, you know, he had the most influence and the most ear for Don Owen in his prime. And so he was technically, I guess, the booker, but they didn't really have a booker. You know, they would kind of collaborate on stuff and work together in that regard. But I think the cool thing was that, you know, Buddy coming from the AWA and having so much influence there that, you know, we didn't have stupid skits. We, you know, everything did kind of build logically and make a lot of sense in that regard. And also that, you know, everything was done in the context of the arena. You know, there were very few, you know, outside goofy, you know, vignettes or anything like that. Even when they started going that direction, you know, we never did. And I think that's one of the things that probably kept me as a wrestling fan, is that everything as a kid, you know, at least had that wrestling logic. And not only that, it was all in the context of the arena and the interview area. And nothing was, you know, people didn't fight over women, or they didn't fight over that. It was always over titles. It was always over money. It was always over being the top person in the territory. And so, you know, that really helped in my mind. And so then, you know, as I saw other things, you know, like, I don't know, the world-class stuff or what have you with Missy Hyatt and Sunshine or whatever, and I was like, you know, I was always, as stupid as this sounds, I was always kind of a purist, and it was probably because of the stuff that I was brought up on. And I never really embraced some of those things that are canon in wrestling now up until later, and particularly when Jim Crockett promotion started to go that way. I mean, I think, like, for example, one of his most famous promos I hated was Ric Flair and Precious, where he's got the mannequin. I just thought that was embarrassing. I thought Rick Steiner going out on the date with Jim Ross and Robin Green was terrible. Or Ronnie Garvin surprising Ric Flair in the hotel room as Miss Atlanta Lively or whatever he was, dressed in drag. I thought that was awful because I didn't want that from Jim Crockett Promotions. I hated wrestling TNT and I hated Fuji Vice. And it's hilarious to me how people always go, oh, Fuji Vice was the best. And then they turn around and complain about the modern product. And if you loved Fuji Vice, you have no basis to complain about the modern product because that was just as terrible as anything today. Anything. But that's just what people do. That's, I don't know, it's memories. The past is bathed in a golden light, and that's just what happens, I guess. I don't know.
No, that makes complete sense. Do you think that the insertion of women into the storyline and stuff, do you think that's ever been done really well? Because it occurs to me that maybe Miss Elizabeth was like the best example of, I thought that worked really well.
Yeah, no, and that sounds wrong. That sounds like I'm against women or something like that, and I'm not. I'm just saying, like, the Mud Pit match and, you know, just the goofy things. I mean, if the women were used in the way, like, you know, like when we were kids, I guess, you know, Wendy Richter was cool, Misty Blue Sims was cool in kind of a trashy way. You know, I wanted wrestling to be more serious, and thanks for letting me clarify that so I don't sound like too sexist, like Andy Kaufman, that they should be, you know, in the kitchen scrubbing the potatoes and peeling the carrots. And, you know, when it comes to wrestling, they're all mashed potatoes above the eyebrows. I truly believe that, to quote Andy Kaufman. But I just wanted serious wrestling. And I knew that, you know, I knew that it was not on the up and up. But my philosophy back then was, if it seemed more real, that more people would like it. And that was probably a misguided philosophy. It was probably a misguided idea because people were going to goof on it no matter what. And there was also all of that history there that we were going against. So, but no, I'm going to have some more Portland people on here in the future. At least I'm working on it right now. One of the guys, I don't want to let it out of the bag, that you may or may not know was actually in Portland when I started watching, I'm working on having him on, and then some other people's. And I'm just trying to get the momentum back after being gone in Fiji, because that's not an easy thing to get your groove back after you spend all the time in Fiji. So what are you going to do?
Well, it certainly looked inviting, and I really enjoyed the show. And I can't wait to hear some of the upcoming episodes, Jim.
Oh, my pleasure, man. Hey, and so where can people find you again? What's going on with your wrestling podcast, Katie Vick Is Alive Alive? Explain that to people.
It's decidedly very different than this show because it's much more adult, and me and my friend Bryant Williams have a discussion about things that are going on in wrestling for about the first half of the entire hour, and the second half we just kind of run down what happened on Raw and insert various things, and I do a few imitations. I do an imitation of Vince McMahon, and we kind of do different things, but it's definitely, I'd like to underline the fact that it is not PG-13, so definitely not for children. So yeah, again, it's on iTunes and Stitcher and wherever finer podcasts are served. It's Katie Vick Is Alive Alive.
There we go. All right, man. Thanks, Britt. I appreciate it. There's Britt Whitmire calling in from Flair Country here.
Hey, Livecast listeners, James Caldwell here letting you know about Loot Crate at lootcrate.com. It's like a friend, knows your preferences, knows what you like, especially in the area of merchandise, themes, t-shirts, lots of great options with a Loot Crate service. What they do is every month they send you a box, you get it in the mail, You get about $40 plus value in every crate every month, sometimes a couple of special surprises or more. If you've seen TorchCon with Sean Radican's monthly unboxings, and go check them out on YouTube or here on our website, pwtorch.com. You know what's inside a box they send you in the mail. You get a T-shirt, you get a keychain, you get a tag, you get a photo, lots of different things from the wrestling world. Loot Crate customizes each box based on your preferences, and they also have different themes. It might be a Star Wars theme, Marvel, lots of different themes they come up with at LootCrate.com. So if you've seen Sean Radican's unboxings, you know what you kind of expect. But Loot Crate is more than just a subscription service. It's also a community, and they share their experiences unboxing each month's crate, and you get that $40 value in the mail with your subscription service. And here at PW Torch, on the PW Torch Livecast, we have an offer where you get a discount off your crate. All you have to do is go to lootcrate.com, and when you sign up and you set up your subscription service, enter the code PWTorch. You get $3 off any new subscription for you. Share it with a friend. Tell a friend. Go to lootcrate.com. Enter PWTorch as your code. Get $3 off your subscription. That's for any new subscription. So be sure to sign up quickly. There's a deadline every single month. But with that subscription, you get about $40 worth of value in each month's themed, curated crate that you get sent right there in the mail with some cool stuff and with different themes each month. So again, lootcrate.com. Enter the code PWTorch. Let your friends know about it and enjoy the subscription service.
If you're like me, you've got a list of favorite websites and a list of favorite podcasts that you visit either every day or throughout the week, but there's probably not a lot of crossover between the two. However, with PW Torch Livecast, that's different. If you're a listener of this show, you should also be visiting our main website, pwtorch.com, loaded with updates covering news in more depth than you'll find anywhere else. Editorials you won't find anywhere else. Live TV coverage and pay-per-view coverage that's unmatched. And so much more on a newly redesigned, optimized, lightning-fast website. That's pwtorch.com. Check it out every day and bookmark it. No matter what device you're using, whether it's a mobile phone, a tablet, a laptop, or a desktop, there's a version that fits your screen and customized for your device. Check it out, pwtorch.com, one of the top sources of pro wrestling insider news since 1987 and online as a website since 1999. Don't miss out. Don't just listen to the live cast. In between live cast listens or while you're listening to the live cast, check out the latest headlines and exclusive articles at pwtorch.com.
So joining us now on the line, I want to thank him for joining us from Memphis Wrestling. You may remember him from back in the day. And also, we can talk to him about what's going on right now. This is very exciting. I don't know if you know if you saw this or not. I would assume you did. But Jerry the King Lawler, the King, has opened up a bar and grill on Beale Street, which is amazing to me. That just blows my mind. And joining us now is the real-life manager of Jerry the King Lawler's Bar and Grill on Beale Street and a wrestling manager and a longtime Memphis promoter and personality. Randy Hales, thanks for joining me this morning. I appreciate it, man.
Jim, good to be here. Thanks for getting in touch with me through my old pal, Mark James. Great to talk Memphis wrestling and great to talk King Jerry Lawler's Hall of Fame Bar and Grill that's open. We're going at it late night last night. As soon as I get off this phone, I'm headed back to work, but it's great, a great mix for me, still involved with wrestling and seeing a lot of wrestling that we play in the bar. So everything's great. Everything's great, and looking forward to this talk today.
So let's talk about the Bar and Grill. I've already made plans when we go down to Tennessee to visit relatives coming up here in the fall. This is going to be, you know, this is a must-do now to go see Jerry Lawler's Hall of Fame Bar and Grill, but describe the Bar and Grill. What does it look like? Is there wrestling memorabilia? What kind of stuff is there?
It's obviously a work in progress. Last day of the month of April, we did a soft opening. The big grand opening will be pretty much the entire month of June. But it's just fantastic because we have, and like I say, it's a work in progress. We have great memorabilia, not only from the career of Jerry Lawler, but pictures everywhere with the greatest names in the history of the business that came through Memphis. We have crowns. We have the AWA World Heavyweight Championship belt that he won May 9th, 1988. Just all kinds of cool things. There's a walk like a wall, a half wall, separating the tables from the bar, and that's filled with programs and pictures and all kind of things. You just don't have to be a fan of Jerry Lawler or Memphis wrestling. There's something for everyone. And believe me, Jim, we've had people in the last couple of weeks come in from everywhere, from Canada, from Norway, from Minnesota, from Wisconsin, a couple of people yesterday. And my main deal is I'm the wrestling guy. I can talk Memphis wrestling better than anybody, but I can hold my own talking the history of wrestling. So I have a fancy title, the director of operations for the bar. But basically, I'm the wrestling guy. I'm the wrestling ambassador. I can relate to wrestling fans. I can give them information. I can answer questions. So when the King's not there, and yesterday we had a handsome Jimmy Valiant for a couple hours. We had Superstar Bill Dundee. A lot of plans coming. But for a wrestling fan, it's a dream to see all this great stuff. And we have nostalgia wrestling tapes from Memphis playing all the time. And then at the same time, we have current stuff from the WWE and from the network playing. So it's heaven for wrestling fans.
It sounds amazing. I'm super excited for you. I hope it is a very successful venture. I hope all the Kings fans and all the Memphis fans come out and support it, so it'll still be there. I know that the wrestling business is maybe only second to the restaurant business, so my fingers are crossed for you. As great and successful as it sounds, I know that, like I said, the bar and food and beverage business is a challenge, but I hope it all works out. Now, where on Beale Street can one find it? Is it near any landmarks?
It's 159 Beale. It's two doors down from B.B. King's restaurant. It's between 2nd and 3rd Street on Beale. It's 159 Beale, and it's a great location. It's kind of the main event block of the thing, and it's just couldn't have been a better location. It's about 3 or 4 blocks down from the Orpheum Theater. It's a couple of blocks down from the New Daisy Theater. It's close to the Peabody Hotel, which is famous. And, of course, it's pretty close to Sun Studios, where Elvis, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, Charlie Rich, the Million Dollar Quartet, made the music back in the 50s. So it's a historic area, and right now we're in the middle of Memphis in May, a big deal, and this is the weekend of the world-famous Memphis in May Barbecue Fest. Just a lot of stuff going on.
So what kind of food do they have on the menu there?
I think we have the best barbecue and the best ribs on the street, on Beale Street, and we have a limited menu for the month of May, Memphis in May, but we have ribs, we have catfish sandwiches, we got barbecue, we got nachos, we got Larry Lawler's, Jerry's brother's favorite appetizer, and we named it after him, which is a sausage and cheese plate that's fantastic. We have fried bologna sandwiches. We got, of course, the famous Lawler Slammy Burger. That's a triple cheese, and you can eat that along with fries. I had a guy the other day, last Sunday, I think, came in. He had come in the other day and had a triple, and he's skinnier than I am. He ate a triple, and he came back the next day and had another triple, followed by a few minutes later, he ate two triples. That has to be some kind of record. And that burger is absolutely unbelievable. We have gumbo. I say limited menu, but we have a good selection. We have the coldest beer on Bill Street. It's just a great thing for a wrestling fan. It's a great mix for me. After wrestling went away with Memphis Wrestling and Power Pro Wrestling for 12 years, I was managing partner and owned percentages of several Sonic drive-ins, which is a fast food chain all over, but mainly in the South. So with me, it's a perfect mix because I like the restaurant business because it's exciting. You never know, days the same. And, you know, I'm a wrestling business guy that needs that. I'm not a 9-to-5 guy, and had that when wrestling went away. But I'm a wrestling guy. I always like to say, still a lion, wrestling born, wrestling bred. When I die, I'll be wrestling dead. This is a great mix because I get to do both, and it's make a living out of doing both. And it was perfect timing. So it's great.
So one time when being interviewed by Wade Keller here at the Torch, Jerry Lawler, I think Wade asked him, if you had $10 million, how would you invest it in a wrestling promotion? And Jerry Lawler's famous answer, and a very Jerry Lawler answer, said, I have $10 million. Why would I get into wrestling? Why would I start a wrestling promotion? I guess the same thing beckons. You know, as you well know, given your background, the restaurant bar business is a challenging one. At this stage of the King's life, why does he want to do something like this? I mean, I'm glad that he is, but wow, the effort and the investment. What do you know what prompted Jerry to do this?
I'm speculating now. I think a big part of it is he's a Memphis guy. Always has been a Memphis guy. The history of Memphis is important to him. And now and Bill Street is a big, big, huge part of Memphis. And I think it was important to him because now, of course, there's a Jerry Lee Lewis has a restaurant and bar down there. And also, Jerry, I would guess, is in his 80s. He's not, he's pretty, he does a few appearances that he's obligated to. Jerry has everything, he's hook, line, and sinker. He's helping decorate. He's helping make the decisions about the menus and the staff and everything. He's very involved. And, you know, I think it's just important for him as a guy from Memphis to contribute to Memphis. And this is a natural for him having a legacy on Bill Street. Memphis has such a wrestling culture and a wrestling town and wrestling history, and he's the major, if not the major part of it. Him and people like Jackie Fargo, Jimmy Vann, Superstar Building, D. Lawler's greatest opponent. I think it's just a cool thing. And you know, obviously, I think he thinks it can be a profitable thing, and for the King to have a just perfect fit and giving back to Memphis and something that he can be proud of. He's proud of Memphis and he's proud of wrestling, and this is a combination of the two. And you know, I'm certainly glad he's done it, and I think it can be great. It's a process of building it and getting everything thing going. We didn't want to miss out in May, but in June we'll be rock and rolling. We have great things planned that hadn't been released yet, but great plans, and you'll see a lot of exciting things coming up at the King Jerry Lawler's Hall of Fame Bar and Grill in Memphis, Tennessee at Bill Street. It'll be great.
You know what you should do is you should set up a table for Austin Idol and then have him never show up. So it'll just be like real life. Just kidding.
I'm just kidding.
It's a joke.
Well, and a serious matter is that he's contacted Austin Idol, wants to come in. So that might not be a joke that you're talking about.
Good, no, we'll I love see. Austin Idol is one of my all-time favorites. He's way, way up there with me. I'm a big, big fan, but I couldn't resist. Sorry. Let's talk about you for a minute. Now, I'm guessing you must have been a fan. Is that how you, like the rest of us, how you got into this whole crazy thing?
I think almost everybody. That goes for everybody from Jerry Lawler to. I was listening to the Stone Cold podcast a lot. I like that podcast. Obviously, he's still a fan. He started out, you know, in watching World Class and the Freebird thing. Yeah, I started out as a fan. My era started watching wrestling in 1970. Won my first job in wrestling, and we have the picture that I should get a commission off of as many as he. So Jerry Jarrett was one of the top baby faces and the booker, and then later the promoter. And there's a 8x10 picture that Jerry sewed. He's at the ring, has his ring jacket in, and in the bottom left-hand corner of the picture is me as a 12-year-old kid standing at ringside waiting to get his jacket. So my first job was selling wrestlers' pictures and getting the ring jackets. 12 years later, at about age 25, I was running the company. I certainly started as a fan and certainly still a fan, especially of the Memphis stuff and the 70s and 80s stuff.
Like, for example, you're the one who called that famous pile driver with Randy Savage and Ricky Morton on the table. Wasn't that you?
Yes, in 1984, I believe.
Yeah, how to live the dream to be able to, you know, not only be on the inside, but, you know, do stuff with the legendary Lance Russell and like I said, Jerry Lawler, of course, and Bill Dundee and all of the legends that were, you know, mainstays or came through Memphis. What a great time you must have had.
It's great. It's still great. As a matter of fact, I'm on the second floor right now of Castle Dundee. I'm at Bill Dundee's house this morning fixing to go to work. He just ran to Mickey D's to get him some coffee. I usually make that run with him. But, Jim, you booked me for your podcast, so I'm missing out on my iced tea, actually. He drinks the coffee and a breakfast burrito. I'm making that sacrifice for you today. I want you to know that.
Well, we're very grateful, and maybe if this goes okay, maybe Bill will want to be on the show. We'd love to talk to him someday. I read his book, and I enjoyed it thoroughly. It's a great, great book. All of Mark James' books are great, by the way. I think we can agree on that. Now, at what point, I mean, we've heard like people like for example, someone who comes to mind that I read their book, Gary Michael Capetta, longtime announcer for the Worldwide Wrestling Federation. He was hired, and, you know, for example, Gorilla Monsoon, you know, he was kind of still kept on the periphery of everything. Did you go through that where you had to earn everybody's trust before they would allow you to see or be involved in the inner workings? What was that transition like from being an outsider to finally letting you be inside?
It just was gradual. Started ringing out then when I was a freshman in high school, then started doing spot shows. And I can't really it was just a gradual thing. Started doing interviews and that sort of thing. It was just a gradual thing, and I can't point to one thing. It just happened. And then I started I got out of high school, went to college, and after college I started announcing. I was riding with Eddie Marlin, which was a promoter, and Jerry Jarrett's father-in-law. Several times a week, Tuesday and Wednesday, I would go to Louisville, Kentucky with Jerry and his partner, Tojo Yamamoto, and then I'd stay at Jerry's house Tuesday nights and Wednesday nights, and his office was in the house, so at the time, I didn't know it was a booking meeting, but I sat in on that and on Wrestling Talk and just started contributing, and it just always had dreams to be an announcer, and then I liked the creative end more than anything, and that's just how it evolved. I tell the story a lot, but one day we were going to Louisville, and Jerry said, I was in the back, and Jerry was riding shotgun Tojo driving, and we were in the back of Jerry. We were in Jerry's limo, but he was in the front seat. I was by myself in the back, and he said, "Randy," he said, "I got a lot of work to do. I'm sleepy." He handed me a pencil and a pad, and he said, "Book a Memphis card for Monday and write the TV, or lay out the TV," is how back in the day you never heard the word write. He ended up going to WWE. Same thing, but the terminology is all different. And so he said, lay out the TV and book the card and for Monday. And when I wake up, we'll go over it. And that was, he used 80% of it. And that was the big first steps. He liked the TV, and then we were off and running.
What do you think is, as you developed and did more and more booking, obviously there's going to be a learning curve. That's just natural. From that first time Jerry had you do it to maybe the time where he accepted 100% of what you did, what do you think you had to learn? What do you think was the most important lesson that you didn't quite have down?
Well, I think I always grasped the main idea was drawing money, and to draw money you have to have people over or get them over. You have to have heat on the heels, and you have to have a baby face they care about. And if you marriage the two guys together with the personal issue, I knew that from a get-go. I think at that time I was a good assistant, good number two guy to both him and Jerry Lawler. My first solo run wasn't that successful, and it was just one of the things where we were in a cycle that was bad, and the talent level wasn't, this was around the 87, 80, well, probably 88, 89, and besides for a few major events that included Lawler winning the world title, that made us flat. It was a 40-year program almost, and we blew it off. Lawler climbed the mountain. But I think when I came back in 94, I knew we had to get new stuff over. I knew that Lawler was not full-time. I knew Jeff Jarrett had gone to the WWE. So I tried to do a balance with people like PG-13, which was Wolfie D and Jamie Dundee, J.C. Ice, Brian Christopher, Doug Gilbert, different people. I established a crew that had great confidence in me. I had confidence in them, and we went with the Smoky Mountain U.S. It just fell together. I think I was just better at getting new people over, and I had the thing where a lot of things were fresh, made the right decisions on who to go with, because in the past, every booker, you don't book anything that you think's not going to draw. You think it's going to draw, and you think wrestler A is going to get over. Well, wrestler A may not get over. If everybody got over, if every idea worked, you'd sell out every night. That's not going to happen. I think I just had the direction that I went in worked. I think bringing Lance Russell back in 1994 added the credibility, and there was nobody better. And that made me look brilliant when he can sell anything and the people believe him selling anything. That's a big deal. So I don't know if I just got smarter and I got lucky. And really, it was just me. Lawler wasn't around. Jarrett wasn't around. It was sink or swim, and it worked. You know, it worked in a bad time, as most territories were going out of business. We had that run starting in 84 started a run that was the best run in 5 years. So I'm proud of all that stuff.
You know, I talked to Lance Russell at Cauliflower Alley Club just a couple of weeks ago, and I was talking to him. One of the things that always surprised me that kind of, I don't know, me personally annoys me is that, you know, people have this certain, for some reason in wrestling, they look down on Memphis. Oh, that Memphis crap, that Memphis this and Memphis that. But for me, I see a direct line between whatever sports entertainment is with more personalities and outside personalities and vignettes and things like that, and what Memphis had been doing for years. I don't understand why people look down on Memphis when I can definitely see that a lot of what the WWE does today and it's successful with can be pointed directly to Memphis wrestling, going all the way back. Memphis has always done these type of aspects with wrestling, and I don't know. I don't think it's a fair thing for people to knock Memphis wrestling and look down on it when I see it as probably the most influential territory if you want to talk about what's still relevant and what's still done today.
And, you know, the current, the names, you can help me, Ghetto or whatever, whoever
Ghetto
the booker is for New Japan.
Yeah, Ghetto and Jada.
He's a big Memphis fan, and basically, you know, he was influenced heavily by Memphis wrestling, and you know, wrestling promotion, wrestling territory, that was the beauty back in the thing, and I think different territories, different styles, and it's subjective. With people have their preference, like chocolate vanilla. I didn't like. Where are you from, Jim? Where are you living? Where are you?
In Seattle, but I grew up on Don Owen wrestling out of Portland.
Right, and they did a lot of BS there too at times. You know, the wild.
Well, all wrestling is a lot of BS, really.
But in Portland,
I was just talking about this. You know, we didn't have a lot of. You know, there weren't a lot of skits or there wasn't anything done out of the context of the interview area. So I grew up more of a wrestling purist, if that's fair to say. I don't know. But, you know, now
right.
I appreciate all of those things that Memphis does.
And the bottom thing is that every part of the country is different, not just with the wrestling, with the anything, but with how they live their lives, and you adapt. And here it was the perfect style, and it's hard to say that when 40, 50 years later there's documentaries like Memphis Heat, and Mark James has a whole slew of books, and the area's top stars opening a restaurant and a bar on the most prestigious area of the town, and for a lot of years Memphis, Tennessee was a weekly town, and there was nobody that would draw as many people to wrestling. I mean, New York City, because of course it was just once a month. Nobody in the glory when at our peak, nobody touched it. And no local wrestling show ever had the viewership that the live TV 5 or even before that Channel 13 show did. But, you know, I don't get offended when people say that, because I was there and I saw it. And then you look at the greatest talent in the world that came through here and say nice things. It's maybe the Ole Andersons of the world or the old school promoters of the world that might knock it. This area didn't have, except for Memphis and Louisville, Nashville, didn't have a lot of fame. A lot of people, you can talk about the Nick Gulas and even Jerry Jarrett, or even me for that matter, and the payoffs or what that, the great talent wouldn't have stayed if they wasn't making money. And, you won't hear Bill Dundee, who's still making money out of Memphis wrestling after 40 years. You know, people made money here. I made money here. A lot of people. Jerry Jarrett built a big castle on the top of the hill here. Jerry Lawler made a lot of money before he ever went to the WWE. So it's just people not knowing. So I don't get my blood pressure high or get upset or get stressed at. It's their preference at all, whether they like it or not. They're just wrong to say that it wasn't a successful business, because it was.
I love the movie Memphis Heat. I think it does a great job, you know, as you can in an hour and a half, covering, you know, a lot of the history of Memphis wrestling. And I think it has a great energy to it, which reflects a lot of the spirit of Memphis wrestling. In it, Jerry Jarrett talks about how a lot of people think that Andy Kaufman was the quintessential Memphis wrestling moment, and he makes an argument that it wasn't. And from his point of view, I can see that. For you, with all of that you know about Memphis wrestling, if you had to pick one moment that you think sort of encapsulizes Memphis wrestling, what do you think that moment or angle was?
But certainly, I agree 100% with Jerry. You know, it was one of the many, many, many classic memories of Memphis wrestling. I think the Memphis territory can and there's subtitles to go along with the Sputnik and Monroe Billy Wicks era, and unfortunately we lost Billy a week ago, and that was, as a fan, that was before my time, but certainly the Sputnik Billy Wicks era. The second era was the rise, the stardom of Jackie Fargo, and the thing that still today, and I would say the most important, longer lasting situation is the rise, the becoming of the king from Jerry Lawler, because I watched from the time him and Jim White came in here was tag team partners, and they drew money here. I think you can't. There's so many classic angles, the Fargo Al Green hair match, but I think the thing you point at is the rise and the kingship and the reign of Jerry Lawler is the most important thing. And Andy Kaufman would be listed as a part of that. But Lawler Fargo, Lawler Dundee, Lawler Idol, they all drew more money than Lawler Kaufman. However, the Kaufman thing was great because it got the David Letterman exposure and got the movie later on. What was it, Man on the Moon or Man on whatever the name of that movie was. But certainly the Kaufman thing was important, but just the career of Jerry Lawler, that's the thing that I would point to, the overall career.
Hey, speaking of the overall career of Jerry Lawler, you touched on it briefly. Me and talk about it more. Did Jerry winning the AWA title, you mentioned it was a, you know, a 10-year, 15-year, whatever it was, sort of a narrative throughout Memphis wrestling, starting with Briscoe and Harley Race and then switching to Nick Bockwinkel.
Yeah, it started in 1974, and it went all the way to 88, so that's 14 years run the road to the championship. That's what this territory was built on for 14 years, and I do think that once you get to the mountain, you get to the mountain. And there's other contributing factors why things went down, the rise of the cable TV and the national companies and Vince and everything, the demise of the territories, everything happened. But once Lawler won the title in the 1988, you know, you got to the mountaintop. You got to the mountaintop, and so that was it, you know. And we never were able to. And I don't know if it was even possible in a regional territory then. And with all the guys worked hard, but you know, the level of talent was nothing compared to what it was even 5 years before. But I think from 89 especially 89 to 94, was rough, and it was part of the reason why, is like I say, or what was there for them to see?
Interesting.
Nothing.
Now, you, of course, transitioned after the USWA and everything, then it transitioned to Power Pro Wrestling, which was a really, in my opinion, a very exciting time and a well-done show, particularly when you were WWE developmental territory. You guys were doing a lot of exciting episodic television. Obviously, you had Jerry Lawler. You had an upcoming Kurt Angle, Sean Stasiak, Stacy Carter at the time.
Let me throw this in. My favorite of all time in the Power Pro days, and now I'm so glad he's doing great, is Matt Bloom. Baldo. We had him Baldo in here. I love that guy. He was a heel. 5 years before, he would have made so much money. I loved him. He was my favorite. We brought in Michael Hayes, Terry Gordy, Michael quite often. We kind of balanced it with the younger WWE developmental talent. We had the legends like Lawler and Dundee. We brought in the fabulous ones. We had Brandon Baxter managing. You know, it was a great time, but it wasn't a territory. By that time, let me explain this. Power Pro was a TV show and a TV company in one market that ended up being helped out by getting revenue from the WWE, and also get some. We sowed some sponsorships and that sort of thing. And just the less than a year between the USWA, somebody had taken over Louisville. It was Danny Davis, did great. Burt Prentice took over Nashville. Burt's still promoting today. We lost TV contracts. We lost buildings. So and then. We did this from the get go a couple of Splash show or a couple of Memphis Coliseum shows that did real good, but it was a TV company, not a wrestling territory. That's the difference. And we survived for 3 years.
You know, in Memphis, a lot of people are talking about the Mid-South Coliseum and what to do with it and things, and I don't know. I think it's a nice memory, and I think there were a lot of great memories in the Mid-South Coliseum. But really, its days as having a building that size running weekly, those days are pretty much over, even in Memphis, aren't they?
Right. You know, but still, people have fond memories, and you know, we talked about Mark James and Jerry Lawler's done stuff to campaign for it to save the Coliseum, because it's historic, not just because of wrestling. It's historic because Elvis played there, and so many people played there, and it was just a great building. But, you know, just from a financial aspect, you know, to get it back going, I just don't know if it's doable. You can, if you somehow structure it to be up to code, and all that kind of stuff, and your structure where the building's maybe 4,000 or 5,000 seats instead of 11,000 seats, and have concerts and different things, that'd be all good, because the city could use a building that size. But as far as any wrestling promotion, because you don't have TV to promote it, you know, nobody's going to do it. It will not be successful weekly, I don't think, ever again, even if this Coliseum gets a second life.
Hey, one of the things I'd forgotten about being here in Portland, you know, I lived in Portland in the early 2000s, and I knew a guy that came through Memphis and was the first tag team partner of The Rock, Bart Sawyer. What a character. Even in wrestling,
yeah,
he was a character.
Is he still alive?
As far as I know, he is. Yeah, I think he had some health problems a few years ago, and that kind of slowed him down. But as far as I know, he's still around. I kind of talk to him through our mutual friend Johnny Fairplay from time to time. But, yeah, when Rock came through, did you have any idea he was going to be what he is?
Since nobody's really became that before or after? No, I did not. But I knew he had talent, and I knew he'd get over, and I knew he'd be a star. You know, he just was so athletic and had the charisma. And the charisma at the time was in the dressing room, not so much on TV, but it quickly came out of him. And when they let him be his self, and, you know, people say, oh, man, they butchered The Rock. I mean, from the get-go, you know, you do that. You know, you find yourself. And Vince found what he wanted The Rock to be. Or at the same time, Rock found out what he wanted to be. And so, no, I didn't know he'd be the hottest movie star on the planet. Absolutely not. Did I know that he would have a heck of a career? I thought he would have a longer career than he did, just because of the fact that he had such a great career, he went to bigger and bigger and better things, you know. And so I think it's great. But, yeah, you see talent, you know, and then you just have to have the luck of the person seeing the talent. You know, there's talent, I'm sure you can say, on the WWE TV now, this person can be a star, but he'll never be a star as long as it takes two to tango and it takes promotion backing you too. So there's talents today, same deal, that can be used better. But sometimes it's talent fault. Some people, you just, the booker, the promoter, the right spot doesn't click for the guy in his head. Is the booker dumb? Well, absolutely not. You know, I get amazed about so much talk about the WWE. Then I look on the torch and I look at the financial statement. I've seen freaking wrestling territories on their ass. And I've seen wrestling territories go out of business and go away. I look at that, the P&Ls, the financials from then. Maybe is it the product you like or I like? Maybe not. But is it a money-making company? Absolutely. You know, absolutely. So, I find humor in all the negative talks and thoughts and comments about a company that's making the revenue they're making. They were smart enough to change to have more. It used to be just selling tickets. That was it. No TV revenue. We pay. Most companies paid to have TV. But, you know, the WWE is healthy and they got their developmental system strong. There's a future and they're planning for the future. And so I don't think Vince or Stephanie or Shane or Hunter or anybody ever goes to sleep at night thinking they're in trouble.
When you go around to Jerry the King Lawler's Hall of Fame Bar and Grill right now, you said you're the wrestling guy, and you're going around talking to people, the guests who come in, and they want to talk wrestling memories. Obviously, there's probably a lot of things that they mention right away, probably Andy Kaufman, probably the Austin Idol hair match, Jerry winning the world title, the blood oath. There's so many great Memphis wrestling memories. Have there been anything that have come up more than you expected or that you have been surprised about that more people have been remembering than you expected? Have there been any surprise popular moments that people bring up to you?
Not really. Not really. And as I'm back in the area, you know, I talk to wrestling fans all the time. I was on TV for 20 years. The older people know me. So it's pretty much the Lawler Dundee thing. And I'm out a lot with Bill too. The Lawler Dundee thing comes up. So really, no surprises. Wish I had a different answer. They ask the normal questions. The older people say, man, because we have Memphis wrestling themes going or Memphis wrestling footage going at the same time. We have a couple of screens with the network going, and I've tried to keep two different WWE things going and three different Memphis things going. The young people don't have a clue, don't get it. But the WWE fans gravitate toward those screens where the Memphis fans, of course, talking that. We have people there from everybody. I'll talk Texas wrestling with them, Minneapolis wrestling with them. It don't matter. You know, I can have a conversation. Certainly not as smart, not as intelligent as I would be talking about Memphis wrestling, because I can throw dates at you there, and I'm you know, kind of amaze them. But no really surprises. Some lessons for me on the people that are the casual viewer, or even the weekly Raw viewer that knows the names and not names, that they're just totally so different than the internet type of crowd, the torch type of crowd. What I've found is, even though that I know that's how you guys make your living, I've ran into very few of the insider type of the fans that like that. They just want to be entertained. I hear very little people, and I'm not saying zero, because I watched the Payback pay-per-view with a couple of wrestling fans, and they said they listened to Torch. So the guy was in Memphis for Memphis in May, and we had the Payback watch, and it wasn't like they could enjoy the match. It was more in the mentality was, this is not very good booking. This I don't like this finish. He's jobbing him out with a clean job. It's just so different than the wrestling fans back in the day. And I just see they're getting mad and not enjoying the show, because what's the promotion's doing, and they're getting more enjoyment out of being mad than they're enjoying watching the matches. And these weren't Memphis wrestling fans. They didn't have a clue who I was or anything about the Memphis wrestling. So it was a different perspective watching. I'm thinking, how are they enjoying this? Because, you know, that's not how I watch wrestling. And I've booked and I've done it all, and I've promoted and I've managed and I've done wrestling gimmick matches. I've done it all. And I don't watch a match and think, well, they beat him clean. They jobbed him out. I would think maybe I could break the match down and thinking, well, they should have gone to the heat quicker, and the comeback was rushed. The technical aspects, you know, I may in my mind thinking, but I'm certainly, it's just a whole different mentality, and I'm just interested to know what that base is. But in Memphis, Tennessee, at that bar, it's not very heavy, I can tell you that. So I'll ask you a question. I'll turn the tables on you. The percentage of the people to watch for enjoyment are the type of people that's so wrapped up on the booking and the creative and that sort of thing. They don't enjoy it because they lose the art of the business. What's the percentage?
Gosh, you know, I feel like that's kind of shifting. I went to the NXT show here in Seattle on Thursday, and it was amazing to me. The crowd cheered where technically they're supposed to cheer for the most part, and they booed where they were supposed to boo. And I talked about this before we got you on the air, but they did the leverage spot. It was a tag team match, and they did the leverage spot with the abdominal stretch where the partner grabs the other arm and they pulled, and the crowd went crazy. And I loved it. I was like, oh my gosh, it's taken us 16, 17 years, but maybe we're finally back at this point. And I was like, you know, that's great where you can enjoy the matches in the context of as they're going on, and You know, I guess if you leave and you want to look at it through a different lens, that's fine. But, you know, turn it off and enjoy it like you'd enjoy the new Captain America movie while it's happening. And I agree with you. I think to a point people look too much through the filter and try to examine matches through the lens of, oh, is this guy friends with management? Or, you know, they look at it through too much politics, where sometimes the politics aren't necessarily there, but they're looking at it that way. And I think some of that does need to cut down. I think there absolutely is too much. But, man, when I had the most fun at this live event that a long, long time. It was really fun to see people, you know, get into wrestling like the morality play, like they're supposed to. And I was like, hey, maybe this can suck me back in again. It was great.
And, you know, it's just one of the things. It is a business, and we all know that. Is I think the point I'm just looking at, I'm thinking, how do you enjoy it the other way? You know, I really don't know. And sometimes I think I certainly, I'm not saying this is kind of like not a sensitive issue, but I'm just thinking, I always thought fans buy the tickets so they should be able to yell for whoever or boo for whoever. I think that's the fans' perspective. But when they start the chant that this is awesome, I know Wade talks a lot about that sort of thing. First of all, they have the right to do that, but I think it takes their enjoyment out of it. I don't know if the fans now these days are trying to be the star and kind of hijack the shows. I don't know what that is, but I think it is disrespectful to the wrestlers. You know, and I think it is. I think fans have a right to say that. So I'm mixed feelings on this, but I hate it when that happens, because let's face it, with wrestling, it's always been the fact of that it's they take physical risk out there, and I guess you do that in life as well, and you certainly in other sports, and it's not any different. You can have a career ending injury anytime you after that bell rings, from bell to bell, that can be it for a person. So I have great respect for the wrestlers, and I think sometimes the fans lose that fact of in so many aspects of how hard this business is, from a physical nature, from a traveling and mental aspect, and now today, you know, they're making more money than they've ever had in history, and I think that's great. And I try to not be the old school and the bitter and all that sort of thing, because everything involves. But I do have concerns. I have concerns when people say, "Oh, they do too much. They do too much." The reason I feel and agree with that totally, sure, things people are popping and reacting to these stunts or these crazy things, but the risk the talent are making to have a good match for the fans and for their job is tremendous. And I can't tell you how much I respect the current crop of guys for doing that.
No, I agree with you. Hey, Randy, before we let you go, and I appreciate your time. You know, there's something, I wish we could bring it back, talk about old school stuff. There's a certain energy and a certain immediacy in having that studio wrestling audience and having everything unfold in the context of a studio as opposed to a larger, less intimate arena. That it's a shame that in today's, you know, attitude that bigger is better, and I don't know, there's something about the studio wrestling. There's that energy and a dynamic that unfolds that I really miss. I wish could be brought back.
Yeah, and I don't think it can. You know, I think you look at TV shows, throw in a John Wayne movie, or watch an Andy Griffin show, which we'll throw in and we'll love. But the kids and the people of to today have the perception of what's good, and I think the perception now with the pyros and with that, the big building and all that, even with the if you had great talent, I don't see the perception of the people thinking it's small time. I think that perception would always be there. I don't think you can go back. It's sad, and I wish it would, and I wish I was going to a wrestling card and could producing a TV show, all the things we used to do. I certainly wish I could do it now, but not going to happen. And so, like I said, this is the perfect mix. This is the best of the both worlds. I get to talk wrestling, get to see wrestling, get to be around great friends and great heroes from the past. But yesterday's gone, and we just have to have our memories and have our videos and that sort of thing. But it'll never go back. Not to be negative nanny, but it'll never go back.
Randy Hales, hey, man, I really appreciate your time, and we will see you at the Jerry the King Lawler's Hall of Fame Bar and Grill. Why don't you mention where people can find it, the hours, any events coming up, any kind of fun stuff like that?
All right. We are at Jerry Lawler's, King Jerry Lawler's Hall of Fame Bar and Grill, 159 Bill Street, Memphis, Tennessee, downtown Memphis, easy to find. And our hours are, at this point, we're 7 days a week. We open at 11 o'clock every day. And we close whenever we close. You know, it could be 11 o'clock at night. It could be 5 o'clock in the morning. We make that call on the fly, depending on the activity and the traffic down there. I think the wrestling fans would like it. I think people that just likes a good time at a bar and a grill. You know, people like to eat. Everybody likes to eat. It's just a great thing. But for wrestling fans, and I see people from all over coming in, it ain't all about it. It's fun. We got Handsome Jimmy Valiant coming in again July the 8th. He'll be there from 3 to 8. We have events in June that that's not finalized, I can't talk about, that will be absolutely huge. Jerry Lawler's there 5 or 6 days a week. He was probably there 8-10 hours yesterday. Probably will get there before I close last night, so he'll probably get there before. He's probably already there. Superstar Bill Dundee will be in the house Wednesday night and Thursday night, and then we're shooting to get Bill there as much as we can on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night. I'm there a lot, so people just want to talk wrestling, and we can talk any kind of wrestling with them. It's just a great. You wouldn't be listening to this podcast if you didn't like wrestling, so you would love this place. Absolutely. And Jim, when you come in the fall, be sure to text me, let me know, and we'll get together, and you can have some of those great ribs or King or the Slammy Burger or whatever. Wrestling fans will love it. I can almost guarantee it.
Hey, is there any special merchandise to buy yet?
Work in progress. We have Jerry Lawler t-shirts, the restaurant t-shirts, a lot of variety on that. We have some classic videos from the great memories of Memphis wrestling, several different video collections, and of course one of the works in progress is that we will carry a lot of the Mark James wrestling books. So Waller has them in his possession. We don't have them at the restaurant yet. But like I say, soft opening, grand opening in June. We don't have all the memorabilia. Just so much. It'll be wall-to-wall wrestling. Right now, it looks great. We have the King's ring jackets and robes and stuff hung from the ceiling. It's absolutely unbelievable, and we're not even halfway there yet. It'll be great. And Lawler's available for pictures and whatever talent we may have at the time. To Sexy Brian Christopher, of course, Jerry's son, will be making appearances. Just great for wrestling fans, and I think they'll enjoy it. And they can purchase wrestling memorabilia, no problem.
Cool. Randy Hales, hey, I appreciate it. I wish you nothing but luck, and I know that the wrestling, restaurant business can be a challenge, but I encourage everybody to get out there and support this and make it one of the biggest attractions in Memphis and on Beale Street. And like I said, I'm super excited to go there and see this. This sounds like a first-class operation, and I wish you nothing but the best. Thank you for your time. Say hi to the superstar for us, and if there's ever anything we can do for you, let me know.
Thank you very much. Thanks, everybody. Come to Memphis. Come to Bill Street. We'll see you 159, Bill. You won't regret the trip, I promise you. See y'all in Memphis.
All right. There's Randy Hales. All right, kids. Well, that was a lot of fun. Thank you for joining us here. And remember, if you enjoyed this, go to pwtorch.com/govip. So much new content each and every week. Wade Keller has been posting just all of the interviews they've had with the WWE creative types, some that have been there, been gone for years, others that have just left and can tell you all kinds of creative stories and Vince stories and everything. And also, coming up on the live cast on Thursday with Wade Keller, same URL, same URL time, join him. Big Sexy Kevin Nash makes his return to the live cast. So that's coming up on Thursday with Wade Keller. And don't forget, if you're going to make any purchases on Amazon, kind of help Wade out. It's kind of like a tip jar, he says. Go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. You just click right through. It doesn't cost you anything, but it gives a little extra money to Wade and his mom-and-pop small business here at the Torch, so be sure to help them out. And again, so much new content all the time. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back next week working on some stuff, and once I get things going, I'll be able to promote ahead a little bit better, but we're just getting our feet back on the ground after being out of country for about 10 days. Well, thank you so much. We will see you next time here on Saturday Morning Wrestling. And remember, it's Jim Valley telling you, until next time, it's all a work, kids. See ya!